This is Big Mike Mike Logan, and you're listening to the Strong Style Story Podcast.
Welcome to episode 30 of the Strong Style Story Podcast. I am your host, Jeffrey Wessel. You can find me at Strong Style Story on Twitter. The blog is at strongstylestory.tumblr.com. And you are listening to us via the Pro Wrestling Only Board podcast feed via Place to Be Nation. With me today, it's a short show today, it looks like. Me and producer Chris Damasceno. Chris, what up?
Hey, not all that much. How's everybody? Well, I can't hear how everybody's doing, but hope everybody's doing well on this particular Sunday that we are recording. So, let's talk about destruction.
Woo. Well, yeah, let's talk about some real life destruction first. I do want to give out some shout outs to people I know that are and have been affected by the recent hurricanes in Texas, Louisiana, and now Florida, including one of our pals that we met in Long Beach, Jana. She was in the midst of Hurricane Harvey. She seemed to come out okay on the other side, so luckily for that. So anyway, so if you are one of our listeners and you are affected by this, please know that we do have you in our thoughts, and hope you will be safe and come out the other side okay.
Definitely, yeah. Hurricanes are no joke to begin with, and just the kind of damage that Harvey's done, the amount of damage that Irma's going to be doing as well, and the looming threat of Jose's kind of still being around, it's an unprecedented time, and it's not a fun time for anybody at all in this case. So,
I understand. There's Jose, and there's another one too.
Right. Can't remember its name, but it's developing
with a K. Yeah, this is some bad weather times. So, just hope everybody who will be affected by this, no matter where you are, I hope you will be okay. On a more positive note, I just want to give a shout out to our friend and occasional guest on the show, Dion Wells. It's his birthday today, as we record this on September the 10th.
Happy birthday, so, Dion.
Happy birthday, Dion. It was a real pleasure, traveling with you to and from Long Beach over the summer. So, and summer is over. So now let's get to the destruction shows. The last time we talked, they hadn't announced the lineups yet. So, of course, the day we posted it, like we said, they posted the lineups for it. So, we haven't really had a chance to talk about it yet. Truthfully, I mean, the biggest shows are going to be the three destruction shows, one of which has now already happened as we discuss this. And then there were the two Tokyo Korakuen Hall shows, which have already come and gone. The biggest news as we were in the early days of this was the revelation that Kenny Omega had a meniscus injury, so he was going to be missing most of this tour. He's still supposed to be defending the IWGP U.S. title at Destruction in Kobe on the 24th of this month, so that's in 2 weeks, but yeah, so Kenny's out, and coming in was a third son of King Haku, teaming with, the Bullet Club and his two brothers, Tama Tonga and Tonga Loa. Leo Tonga has come in now, formerly known as Hikuleo. The last we would have seen him was that charity show in Auckland, New Zealand that Fale threw, and where Hikuleo defeated Henare, the young lion that we haven't seen in quite some time.
Uh-huh. Yep, I do recall that as well. So it was interesting that they brought him in, and, you know, good on Kenny for at least getting a little bit of rest. The surgery itself, from what I heard, is minor. So it's at the very least.
So does he actually need surgery for this then?
I'm not sure if it was surgery or whatnot, but they said the injury was minor. It was something that he's had for a little while now, so they figure, I guess, to rest him up. I'm trying to remember the exact details of that. So, but either way, using another one of Haku's sons as a replacement for the time being on the minor shows all the way until Kenny has to defend the U.S. title, it's actually a fairly smart play, I would say, just so that way he gets rest and he's ready for delivering a really good match with Juice down the line.
Yeah. Well, and of course, you know, it's not without precedent, though, that, you know, we'll keep an eye on it. Hopefully he'll still be able to make that, but we've seen that before, as we saw when Hiroshi Tanahashi famously wasn't able to perform in that ladder match with Kenny Omega that we still have not had yet. But, I mean, we had it instead with Michael Elgin. So anyway, hope Kenny does recover okay. Is there anything really worth mentioning on the two Cork and Hall shows? I mean, the elimination matches were all kind of fun.
Yeah, they usually tend to be for those particular type of matches. So, and I did look it up again. It seems the nature of the injury was more of a grade one or two tear, so it doesn't require surgery. So, basically, New Japan saying he's not likely to miss the match against Juice, which is nice.
Okay. All right. Well, good.
Because, I mean, not only that, but you also got to consider he's got a good ROH in mid-October for the show in Chicago that they're doing as well.
Yeah, I wonder if that you know, down the line will affect that. Hopefully not, for the sake of the people who've already bought tickets for that.
Yeah, seriously.
So, that's what they, you know... they built the show on, which, you know, I'm still a little pissed off about that, but, you know, but that's another topic entirely. So, the two elimination matches were fun. They were what they were. It was interesting that Rocky Romero was the last one standing from the Chaos side of things, in the first one.
Yeah, definitely. I wasn't expecting that, but at the very least, I guess, if they're going to be using Rocky as kind of a fall guy for certain extents, or as a singles junior again, who knows? I mean...
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, they're kind of giving him a look in. I mean, he also got the pin against Bushi in that tag match on Saturday, but then he took the fall today in the Never Openweight Six-Man Comedy belt.
The not-so-comedy anymore belts. Now, LIJ has defended them three times, which is a record for the title, so...
Yeah, that's kind of, yeah.
Things are looking up.
Let's go down that. I mean, there's not really much else to talk about for the, the other ones, I mean, they were what they were. They were Cork and Hall shows. I mean, you know, you have you know, things happening... And the young lions looking decent. I thought Shota Umino against Tetsuhiro Yagi was pretty okay.
Mm-hmm.
And fun. Then that six man to open up yesterday. I guess we're going back to Nagata and Nakanishi having issues with each other again.
Yeah, and I think it was being explained because Chris Charlton was doing some pretty awesome, as usual, translations of the stuff that commentary was saying, and Milan was mentioning apparently how Nagata knows how to push Nakanishi's buttons to kind of get the best performance out of him, and that might have played a hand into what he was doing, so...
Right.
Nope. Friendly dad rivalries abound. This is fine.
Yeah, it is what it is, huh? So, these matches were what they were, and, you know, as they usually are. Okay, so this whole thing with Will Ospreay being a cat, I feel we need to discuss this.
It is interesting that it just started with a Twitter conversation between him and Hiromu in the first place. And funny enough, it's not the first time that Hiromu's called him a cat either. I believe there was a segment over in New Japan World, I want to say, where Hiromu was asked to compare certain wrestlers in the junior division during Best of Super Juniors as to I guess, like, compare him to, like, an image or an animal or something like that, and Osprey ended up being a cat, according to him. So, this has, like, precedence, actually.
Right. I mean, I think at this point, though, you could do a dissertation on all of Hiromu's,
quirks.
quirks and obsessions over the over the last year, you know, since he came back to New Japan. Like, it's gone from, you know, there was the overarching one with Belt-san, but then, you know, he went to Dragon Lee, like, you know, that goes back a few ways.
Oh yeah,
you know, with him and Dragon Lee, you know, got a little bit of history. Then him and Rick, I think it was Ricochet. You know, with the artist model dolls.
Mm-hmm.
That he was with, and then, you know, we go to Daryl.
Yep.
And now he's moved on to a human feline in Will Ospreay. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, he was saying before, remember that, you know, that press conference after Best of Super Juniors, where Hiromu said he wanted to fight, he wanted to wrestle Will Ospreay, not Kushida again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he said, no, you can't. And that's, you know, Hiromu, you know, had a little breakdown after that.
Uh-huh. Just tiny little. Of course,
yeah.
I will say this, like, I know some people are probably already annoyed with it because that's wrestling fans in general, apparently.
I did see some people I really otherwise like was like saying that this was garbage. How?
Yeah, like, I get annoyed. I get if you're being annoyed by, like, the exchanges and stuff like that, but I think it's being played out well, especially on Will's part, with him basically insisting he's not a cat, and yet there are the whiskers. There's the little nose.
Yeah, there's the whiskers. And the best part is that no other wrestler, no matter who, you know, they're working for or what unit they're in, nobody else is buying that Will Ospreay is not a cat. That is the best part of all this.
Which is great, and I think...
Yesterday's Twitter exchange, I mean, four different units got involved. Four different New Japan units got involved with that conversation. Because you had, you know, Fale and Lance Archer both putting their two cents in.
God.
So, yeah, that was something else. That was something else.
I'm appreciative of it. Because Will's playing the joke well, in which he's being that kind of trying to be that straight man who denies it, but at the same time, you see him doing these little things to himself and the way he's landing after certain moves, and the fact that even
he was totally trying to paw it at Roman.
And the fact that even the crowd is calling him like Neko Spray or Neko Osprey or something like that too.
Oh boy, yeah. So yeah, Will, face it, man. You're a cat. Just embrace your felininity while you can, because we all see it, brother.
And of course, make that sweet merch money with Topla's art, which you commissioned probably. So
yeah, that's right. See, yeah, there you go. Yeah. Start making some money. Give Topla some money. Unlike Rush.
Yeah. Topla called me fat a couple of days ago. I almost considered it a compliment.
Yeah, I don't think that word means what thinks it means.
I don't think so either, but this is fine. It could be worse.
All right, so let's talk about the show from today. Once again, this was, honestly, I was more going to wake up for yesterday's Cork and Hall show to watch it live, although I woke up like 10 minutes before my alarm was supposed to go off, and I was just like, oh no. My body was like, no. Nope, not happening. I was like, okay. So I just turned my alarm off and watched it after I watched the morning Premier League matches. But Destruction of Fukushima, though, that was, I mean, from the Fukushima Azuma General Gymnasium, this just seemed to me like a nothing show, honestly.
It definitely, I would say, if we're going to pick out of the three Destruction shows, it probably had the weakest sort of lineup on it, but some stuff turned out to be pretty all right with it. We kind of went a little bit into the trios bout that happened. the main event. Yeah, we have our gripes with it, but we'll get to it. But let's just run that card real quick.
There's not much to really talk about in the undercard. I mean, some things were kind of okay. I mean, like the opening match was all right, and it just occurred to me though, watching the Young Lion, Oka and Kitamura against Goto and Yoshihashi, that really, I have absolutely no time for either Goto or Yoshihashi at this point. Like they're serviceable. They can put on a match, but boy, they're just like on a slow boat to nowhere.
I just busted out laughing at Goto trying to beat a Young Lion with a Boston Crab. What a bastard!
Well, that would have been the Young Lion finish. I mean, that's just kind of how that goes.
True.
I mean, we've seen Hiromu do that too. We've seen Hiromu win with a Boston Crab against a Young Lion. Yeah, so,
I just gotten the chuckle out of it because I'm just like, Goto, man. It's like you act so above it, but there's a reason why you're in the opening match at the same time, which is unfortunate because.
Yeah, okay, right?
The case of Hiroki Goto's entire career as a whole is almost like a strong style history dissertation just waiting to happen in another couple of years.
I think it will be once we do that. And we are going to do a strong style history sometime this month. We were going to try to get an interview with somebody, but unfortunately. He's based in Houston, so I don't think he's going to be too available to do podcasts anytime soon. So, but we'll keep you posted on that. So there will be, we promise, there will be a strong style history for the month of September. We already have October's topic picked out too, but we'll talk about that later. There were three title matches on this show too. The first one was War Machine against Guerrillas of Destiny against the returning Killer Elite Squad in a three-way tag match for the IWGP Heavyweight Tag Team titles. The first of three of these matches, of these exact same matches on this tour. Why, God, why?
Don't get me wrong, by the way. I liked this first match, but then I realized, oh, we're doing two more of these.
Yeah, I mean, this one was not bad. I mean, and let's face it, War Machine have the looks and the lifestyle going on here. I mean, their entrance gear and their presence. I mean, they are made for New Japan Pro Wrestling. There's no way around that. But at the same time, and it was nice to see the Killer Elite Squad are back in action after Lance Archer's. His spinal injury. Although I'm not so sure about the cornrows here, brother.
I kind of didn't understand it either. But then again, I've stopped trying to understand Lance Archer and his fashion choices quite some time ago.
Yeah.
I also kind of kept wondering why in the world is Davey Boy Smith Jr. rocking like his dad's late '90s look with just the jeans. Come on,
yeah, wrestling in jeans. Come on, man. Yeah, that was not a good look either.
This is not a street fight, by the way. Like, it's an actual wrestling match. You know, that one thing that you're apparently not all that good at to not be able to be in G1 again this year.
Yeah, which maybe was kind of a shame, but that he wasn't able to be there. But
not really. But, I'm completely okay with him not being in a G1 ever, to be honest with you. I was not impressed by him in the 1 year that he was there. So
you're not on the Harry Smith, David Boy Smith Jr. train then?
Not really. No. Plus, he kind of didn't endear himself with some of the comments he made during G1 with the whole because he gave the Omega Yano match a certain level of shit, and I'm just like, come on, dude. Like,
yeah, that's true. Yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah, I mean, that wasn't a good look, to be honest. I'm gonna say the thing that stood out for me in the three-way tag, heavyweight tag match is that the Guerrillas of Destiny not only looked but acted like total geeks in this match.
And I'm kind of wondering if that's on purpose, so that way in the later matches, if they come off a little more vicious, it makes a bigger impact, or whether it was just because they were kind of in the secondary market kind of thing. They're just like, it's like a house show.
Yeah, and you know, I don't know, but I mean, they just didn't. I mean, they just like pointless. I mean, why were they even in this match? I mean, I can understand maybe doing like a series between the three. You know, like, you know, one match is this, the other, you know, is this. But why would we need to do three of these three-way tag title matches when, you know, the other ones haven't been that great either?
Yeah.
You know, earlier in the year, what was it? It was in the it was the New Beginning.
Yes,
cycle shows they did.
I believe so. Yeah, they did it for both of the New Beginning shows.
Yeah, and except it wasn't the Girls of Destiny. It was what was it? Hanma and Ma. It was GBH, wasn't it?
Hanma
and Makabe.
I believe so. Yes.
And not War Machine either. It was Yano and Ishii. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I think this would have been much better off with the Killer Elite Squad against War Machine singles.
I do agree on that as well. I think as a match just between those two teams, it would be, I think, better paced and altogether less almost having to wait for another team to do something, kind of the transitions between holds and the like. But I figure New Japan's going for an angle of sorts where they're trying to build the fact that anything could happen, maybe in these three different tag matches where you could see the title change maybe not once but twice during the process, or even like three different times. But we've seen the formula before and seen it where the champs just retained all the time, to where's
that's what happened the last time.
Yeah, and that's, you know, what I'm saying, where's the indication that anything's going to be different this time around of any kind? Or it just feels like they're using this as a match, as a way of just throwing stuff onto the cards, respectively, even though they only would really need it for one, at most, two of them, rather than all three.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I just wish he would... Gato, stop it. Just please stop. I mean, we get it. There's a lot of people you need to put on a card, but you really don't need to put one of these matches on every one of the, you know, the name shows on this cycle of on this tour.
Oh yeah.
So
speaking of which,
please stop it.
Since we're on the heavyweight division talks, two things I wanted to go over as well. First one, Monster Rage put him in World Tag League at the end of this year. Even if they're Young Lions, even if they're just going to lose every single match, just put them.
So which one? So wait. So who is Monster Rage? Oka and Kitamura.
Yep. And like, just I like those two a lot together. Like, they have really good chemistry together from their match that happened at the opening second match of the card, I believe is what it was, and just fun stuff all around. And then there's also some big news that I kind of found out through Bola this past weekend. Yes, that was the Battle of Los Angeles all three nights. I think I mentioned that last show around.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. Yeah, we should talk about that later.
Yeah.
But if this is New Japan relevant, go right ahead.
It is, because during the course of the nights, I was kind of fortunate to be just like fairly close to where Meltzer was sitting, and we were actually like right next to him in line on night three. We ended up hearing from him and some pretty good sources that they are going to be seeing Matt Riddle and Jeff Cobb are going there at the end of the year as the Chosen Bros for World Tag League.
And apparently
Cobb kind of just like wink, wink, nudge, nudge that it too when he was asked about it during the course of the night as well. So that's really big news for the tag division if those two are showing up in it.
Wow, that's pretty huge.
That is a legitimate like foreign team that they can use for like doing some good.
Yeah,
stuff.
I wonder how their buddies in ROH are going to feel about that though. I mean, last year they had like that one team that was from MLW that, you know, ended up not doing it. Wait, was it MLW? No, WLW, World League Wrestling. You know, the Harley Race's thing, and you know they didn't end up doing much of anything.
That was just Tanahashi needed a solid from The Office, and that was pretty much it, so it seemed.
Because
I think Tana did some sort of seminar for him a couple of months earlier, and that's, I guess, how they found out about that team.
Oh, yeah. I think you're right about that.
Yeah,
so.
I think that's what it was, so.
All right. Well, I mean, we're still a few months away from the world tag league. So, and I have some teams I want to see in that too. But we can discuss that, you know, when the appropriate time comes.
Yep. Some interest. But, yeah.
The last non-title match on the show, Tetsuya Naito and Hiromu Takahashi beating Tomohiro Ishii and Will Ospreay. This was probably my favorite match of the night, to be honest.
It's between that and the six-man tag for me, and it just kept me thinking, man, I would love to see a Naito-Will Ospreay singles match, and Hiromu Tomohiro Ishii for that matter, too. Like,
you know, that would be up. Totally up, and honestly, I thought Hiromu and Okada in that elimination match on the 7th, I thought they had some great chemistry. I do want to see a Hiromu Okada singles match that, you know, means something. You know, I think that would be, you know, right up Hiromu's alley, because I mean, remember, he, you know, we've talked about this a couple of times. You know, he's trying to take his career path from Prince Devitt, you know, as a junior who's wrestling, who's hanging with the heavyweights. You know, so I mean, I think that certainly is a distinct possibility.
It's crazy to me because we live currently in a New Japan world where the junior division guys could easily hang from a talent standpoint against some of the heavyweights within it as well. So it'd be interesting to see a couple more open weight matches here and there if Gato does decide that's an avenue to be pursued, because there's definitely a lot of fresh matches that you could do with that rather than just like the kind of short but sweet interactions and tag bouts.
Yeah, there hasn't been like an open. Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, I think that they've. Yeah. I see what you're getting at. And speaking of open weights, so the never six man comedy titles, as we like to call them around here, were on defense, and Evil Sonata Bushi defeated Okada, Kazuchika Okada, Toriano, and Rocky Romero, with Bushi hitting Romero with MX to retain.
Which was after Sanada gave Yano a rope-assisted version of the Paradise Lock, and after a series of reversals where Evil went for Evil, missed, Okada went for Rainmaker, countered into Evil, and just peace out right there on the spot.
Yeah, and let's not forget, Evil has another direct win on Okada now, you know, going by the rules of the match.
Yep.
You know, with, he eliminated Okada. I mean, yeah, it was over the top rope, but, I mean, hey, by the rules of the match, you know, he got a direct win on Okada heading into King of Pro Wrestling, which we will talk about in greater detail here in a little while.
Yeah, and Evil's been talking about it as well, too, mentioning that there's more than just one way to beat the quote-unquote Superman of New Japan and the afterwards of that match, so...
Yeah, that much is true, but, yeah, you know, it was a good match, but ultimately pointless, because, I mean, do we ever really think for 2 seconds that Okada was going to hold the never-openweight six-man comedy titles? Really? When you get down to it?
I would have liked it. He'd be the serious man in a kind of a comedy team between Yano and Rocky. It could have made for an interesting defense or two here and there. Something to keep him busy in between, leading up to, you know, the Wrestle Kingdom shows during the middle. Because you could always do these kinds of defenses for the six-man titles and the Korakuen Hall shows and even the house shows kind of leading up to the bigger events, too, and not have him work as much, to be honest, so...
Well, that may be true, but at the same time, you know, it's I don't think... I mean, it was something to fill... this was a... Let's face it, yes, it was a title match, but it was a title match that was a prelude to the title match... At King of Pro Wrestling, yeah. And that's what it was. Again, it was a fun match, but ultimately, I just kind of thought, and there was not really any drama. I never really thought that Okada was going to hold this title at any point. You know, it's just, you know, it seems, you know, a little beneath him. You know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe it's just me. I'm welcome for comments, but. The main event, I really don't want to talk about this, but I guess we have to. The Never Openweight Championship, another lumberjack match for this belt with Minoru Suzuki against Michael Elgin. Suzuki retained after, you know, getting Elgin got hit with the Iron Finger from Hell from a member of the Suzuki-gun that was not even part of the Lumberjacks. So, you know, gang, imagine a Suzuki versus Elgin match without the bullshit. I mean, we all know that we all know Minoru Suzuki can deliver when called upon, and Michael Elgin during G1 was, you know, in a few cases having like 90s All Japan quality matches.
Barn burners, my god.
Yeah, and this is what we get. And there were some great interactions between Suzuki and Elgin. I mean, I think a Suzuki Elgin feud. I mean, I actually think it's been a good feud. But this match was full of some bullshit, and you know, just why?
It's Elgin's old title shot, but it makes me wonder, from a New Japan perspective, does Elgin keep chasing Suzuki given the fact that the win didn't come without some extra shenanigans on top of it all, or does he focus his attention elsewhere, or what happens from here? I'm kind of interested to see what happens with these next two shows, because I believe there's some more interactions between the lot. Let me just double-check the cards here again.
Yeah, there definitely is. There definitely is. I mean, it's mostly undercard, but yeah, there definitely is. In fact, we'll get into that at Destruction in Hiroshima. There's an interesting pairing happening involving Elgin and Suzuki.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it's just, there were some bright spots in that match, but God, there was just so much. I mean, when the opening of the match had two full solid minutes of them trying to get Taichi out of the ring, it's like, yeah, I can see where this is going, you know?
Yeah. And it just felt like, and again, it was something that Jeff and I were discussing before the show started too, but it feels like these lumberjack matches are you and I.
Before this show. Okay,
yeah,
I thought you meant
that, just before we started recording. Just our whole discussion was that it seems that in these lumberjack matches, it's Suzuki-gun's time to shine, and everybody else looks like a bunch of geeks in the process, because Taguchi Japan didn't do a whole lot of anything until the near end, and even then, you know, they took themselves out and left Iizuka wide open to, you know, interfere accordingly, so...
Yeah, and like in the last one, it was Goto and Suzuki, and Chaos just got washed that whole time. Like they looked like shit. It's like, why are you even a unit at this point? You know, it just did not look good. But you know, hey, what do I know? I'm clearly not the booker for a multi-million, you know, dollar international wrestling company, so what do I know about that? But yeah, this match just wasn't good, and this show was just kind of a nothing show. I mean, there was nothing. If it weren't for the title matches, this was a house show, you know.
But hey, if there was,
maybe the problem is that they split this up into three different shows instead of two.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, you're trying to stretch this out, and it just isn't working, I don't think. But again, what do I know?
You go with the hand that you're dealt with, and for what it was, it was alright, but we definitely feel that out of the three Destruction shows, this probably had the weakest lineup out of the three. So, with that said, we do have Hiroshima's show.
Yes,
in the
Hiroshima. Yeah, Hiroshima, which will be on this coming Saturday as we're recording, on the 16th of September. Destruction in Hiroshima from the Sun Plaza Hall. This show will be on New Japan World. Early in the show, we're going to get a tragic occurrence. The final match of Roppongi Vice.
Everybody just cries.
Yeah, this is it. The end of Roppongi Vice, Rocky Romero, Trent Beretta against Yujiro Takahashi and Chase Owens, which
it should make for an easy win for them. And to be honest,
No, I see this going the other way because I think Yujiro will hit Pimp Juice on Rocky, or Chase will do his thing on Rocky. What is it? That package driver?
Yeah,
on Rocky, and then you know that'll give you know because it looks like they're already kind of setting up a feud between Beretta and either Yujiro or Chase Owens, which is hey, great, actually giving them something to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, kind of Trent's introduction to heavyweights, but yeah, which is awesome, definitely.
But I mean, Chase Owens already kind of had his graduation into the heavyweights during G1 Climax, because remember he had singles matches against both Kitamura and Oka during G1 Climax.
That was indeed a thing.
So
I'm excited for it, and I'm interested to see how the crowd in Japan will react to with Roppongi Vice's final match, because I mean we saw the obvious like big final tag match that they had as juniors in Long Beach, and that was a pretty emotional moment in its own right there as to how
that was. But they've also still been teaming and winning tag title matches in Wrestle Circus, who keep proving to be a train
the
wreck.
The less we talk about Wrestle Circus, the better. Let's move on.
I don't want to talk about Wrestle Circus. So we mentioned interaction between Michael Elgin and Minoru Suzuki. The third match at Destruction in Hiroshima is Togi Makabe, Michael Elgin, and Kota Ibushi against Suzuki, Iizuka, and Taka.
Mm-hmm.
So, oh, hey, you know what? That's something we need to talk about. The Taka Taichi show. And the K-Dojo show, even though I haven't seen tape of that yet.
Yeah, I haven't seen the K-Dojo one, but I saw a couple of the matches out of Taka Taichi Season 2. As a quick note, the main event is worth checking. Do that.
Oh, yeah,
it was fun.
Main event, yeah, we'll talk about that here in a minute, in a little bit. Following that, following up, the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag Team Champions, Funky Future, Ryusuke Taguchi and Ricochet defending against a Suzuki Gun team of Yoshinobu Kanemaru and Taichi.
Here's hoping that Ricochet and Taguchi retain, for one. Second, honestly, this should be Taka and Black Tiger 7 in there, because they just won the All-Asia Junior Tag Titles, I believe, in All Japan a couple of weeks ago, too.
They did, but, you know, Black Tiger 7 doesn't work New Japan, so there you go.
Just bring him in as a one-off. I mean, they got Kojima and Taichi to work their 45th anniversary show. It's the least they could do. Just bring the show back for a night. Why not?
I don't know. But, actually, I'm hoping that this doesn't go that way, but I can also see Kanemaru and Taichi winning just because A, because of Suzuki-gun bullshit, but B, because coming up will be a junior tag, the junior tag league, and it looks like they're actually trying to make a go of it with Hiromu and Bushi.
Ooh.
As Los Dos, and there is already a feud between Taichi and Bushi and Bushi.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right now, so I can and Kanemaru for that matter, going back to Best Super Juniors.
Mm-hmm.
So I can maybe see that happening. Honestly,
That could be interesting. Definitely,
that could be something to set up at Wrestle. You know, at not a Wrestle Kingdom.
King of Pro Wrestling, you mean? Or
no, not King of Pro. The Junior Tag Tournament happens during Power Struggle.
Oh,
so I'm wondering, I honestly think that they could be setting that up down the road. Because I wonder if they're going to actually – because if you noticed, the other day, Bushi and Hiromu seem to have a very cacophonous, but they have a group entry now.
Mm-hmm.
They have a group intro. So maybe.
Okay. Could happen. Also, while we're on the subject of this match, let me just take the time to congratulate Ricochet on being the first ever two-time winner of the Battle of Los Angeles, which he pulled off this past weekend.
He was, but I think we also know that there's something else being attached to that, too,
mm-hmm.
which is the stories of him going down to Florida. So
it's a big bit mentioning that he wants to win the PWG title as one last thing before he moves on to bigger and better things. Man said it himself. So kind of excited to see what the rest of 2017 looks like for Ricochet, to be honest.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Yeah, it's going to be interesting. So after that, the second of the three IWGP heavyweight tag team three-way matches, I really don't want to talk about that.
Well, I mean, it is
what more can we say?
It's Hanson and Rowe defending against KES and GOD again. We'll see if... I'd say if a title change is going to happen, it's most likely to be on this one out of the three, but we'll see how it plays out. I think we can just leave it at that.
Yeah.
Nothing against the guys in the match in question, but it's just against the second of three of those matches. So we're
why do we need three of them in a cycle, you know? But anyway, all right, we've already beaten that dead horse. So
speaking of repeat matches, though, we're getting a second one of this match as well too, where it's Fale and Leo Tonga against the Taguchi Japan variant of David Finley and Juice Robinson.
Yeah, well, again, it was supposed to have been Kenny Omega, but what are you going to do if the dude's injured? So,
he rests up and let Leon Tonga get some experience in the process.
Then we have Chaos and Gobernables 10-man, which, hey, cool. I mean, they always seem to have decent matches together.
Mm, definitely.
And let's face it, as a unit, I think it's just because of how small they are. As a unit, I think the Gobernables have the most chemistry. Mm-hmm. And being the most with it as far as doing double team and triple team moves. So, they seem to have it together. The IWGP Junior Heavyweight title will be on defense as well. Kushida defending against El Desperado. I think this will be a good match.
Oh, God, I've been waiting for this match for quite some time because it feels like a blood feud that these two have built between one another. Just... great.
Yeah, really kind of ass.
Should deliver. So. And again, just, and this is something that I was thinking about last night while watching the show as well, too. Just talk about a 2017 for Kushida. We thought it was going to start in just the crappiest kind of things, like in character wise, but losing the title to Hiromu right off the bat at the beginning of the year and then kind of struggling, including, losing to Hiromu in what, like a 2.5-minute match on top of it all?
I mean, it didn't look good, but at the same time, Kushida has ended up being one of the most decorated wrestlers in the last couple of years too. He won Best of Super Juniors. He regained the IWGP title. He's won the ROH TV title and has been making a go of it.
And now
so
he's
far.
Won the
and,
World WCPW's Wrestling World Cup, which
yeah, he won the Pro Wrestling World Cup from Blood Culture. So yeah, I mean he's become one of the most decorated guys out there right now.
Yeah, Kushida's kind of amazing. 2017 is insane, and I love it. Just dude has been putting in the work for it, and really excited for him because he's definitely the title of being the ace of the juniors. We initially were kind of just thinking to ourselves, most of this year would be a redemption story just to get back to that one title that makes him such, but he's proven himself that and then some on top of it all. So really, really good times. I'm excited to see what Kushida does. And I'm excited for Despy as well too, because this is like his first big chance in quite some time to prove that he's every bit as good of like outside of all the Suzuki Gun nonsense. So
yeah, I thought he had a really decent Best of Super Juniors too at
yes,
the time. So yeah, I mean he's
definitely.
I'm really looking forward to that match. Another match, I don't know how much I'm looking forward to it, because I'm not that fond of him. To be, to wrestling Twitter, this seems like sacrilege. I'm not really that fond of Zack Sabre Jr., but. He will be challenging Hiroshi Tanahashi for the IWGP Intercontinental title. I know for a fact that this will be a better match than the one Tanahashi had in Long Beach against Billy Gunn.
Oh, easily.
For God's sake. But Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Neither Steve nor Lawrence are here, so I'm not going to hear any Billy Gunn nonsense today.
There you go.
But no, yeah, that match was garbage. So, I mean, at least I know it'll be a better match, but, you know, I just, Zack Sabre's cool as a human being. I like some of the things he tweets about, you know, and his support of Jeremy Corbyn's Labour Party is entertaining to read. But yeah, I'm just, as a wrestler, I'm still not entirely sold on him. I'm sorry.
No, I think it'll be a fantastic match on the basis that Tana tends to rise to the occasion on these big time matches, and he's not opposed to making the talent around them look good, which I think is more than
which is
going to be great.
I think he proved that the very first time he and Okada fought.
And that's definitely, that argument has proof of it going as far back as a couple of years ago. But what I'm saying is, on top of that, I think Zach has found his niche being in Suzuki Gun. Crazy enough as it is to say, it is probably the best thing that could have happened in his New Japan career, and the fact that he gets to play a dickhead, which he's really, really good at, especially with his wrestling style. But the fact that out of the Suzuki Gun guys, he's one of the few, at this point, maybe the only one that doesn't need the interference nonsense to kind of work his matches, and that's kind of a breath of fresh air for Suzuki Gun matches. As sad as that is to say in the year 2017.
You may not be wrong there, so.
I think he'll be good, and honestly, a part of me is thinking that it happens where he wins the IC title right there and then, just because whether Tana has more projects to work on down the line, given the new haircut and everything else, or whether he needs time to still rest up the biceps still for down the line, King of Pro Wrestling or what may have, this probably would be an opportune time to take the title off of him.
Yeah, let's talk about Tanahashi's hair for a minute, because we kind of forgot about that. Boy, the mourning going on over his hair.
It's so weird. It's so bizarre. It's going to take a little while to get used to it for me.
And the reason why he cut it was for a movie he was doing, which is apparently an adaptation of, I don't know if they're comics or just children's books in Japan, where it's like, you know, a kid's father is secretly a masked pro wrestler.
Is
what it is. I forget the title, but yeah, that's why the hair was shorn. So
interesting.
Although I noticed he put some highlights back on it, which is good, because I didn't think it looked that. I mean, when it was just all black, I didn't think it did not look good.
Yeah, the all brown look was definitely the weirdest. It felt a little more Tana-esque with the highlights re-added back into it. So
yeah. So anyway, so that's that for Destruction in Hiroshima. The last show of the cycle is Destruction in Kobe, which happens at, you know, Kobe World Memorial Hall, in which we also still have the third of the IWGP Heavyweight Tag Team three-way matches. And then the main event is supposed to be Kenny Omega against Juice Robinson in the first defense for the IWGP United States Heavyweight title. Hopefully this will happen.
Mm-hmm.
It would be a shame if it didn't.
Yeah,
because I think Kenny and Juice can have a good match together.
Yeah, definitely so. And then also there is the Okada Ospreay Evil Takahashi tag match as well too, which should be pretty lit on its own right.
Yeah, that'll be lit. So let's move on to King of Pro Wrestling. And so far, only two matches have been announced for that. I think we can maybe guess a couple that'll happen. In addition to that, it's all, you know, educated guessing at this point. But the announced matches are Kazuchika Okada defending the IWGP title against Evil, following the defeat at G1. I was very intrigued that they kept this match for King of Pro Wrestling as opposed to the Destruction Cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought for sure that we were going to get Okada versus Omega 4 as the rubber match.
Yeah, it is very interesting that it is a situation where Evil's getting the King of Pro Wrestling shot rather than Kenny. But then again, it's one of those things, too, where we'll have to kind of wait and see what happens with him post the destruction in Kobe as well, and what comes out of it. Plus, the other match that's not exactly 100% confirmed as of yet, but that heavily rumored is the contract match between Tetsuya Naito and Tomohiro Ishii, which...
No, that's been confirmed. That's on the lineup.
Okay,
yeah, that's
so
on the lineup.
Officially
brother.
On the lineup now.
Yeah, that's the only other one that's officially on the lineup. So yeah, it'll be Naito against Ishii, which they've had a few good matches this year so far. Mm-hmm. It has to be said. Unfortunately, Ishii has come out on the winning side of both of them, I think.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Ishii's
so.
Yeah, as far as I know, this year, Naito has not been able to beat Ishii in a singles match, so...
Well, this will probably be it, because I can't imagine that they're not... I just cannot imagine that they're not going to have Okada versus Naito at Wrestle Kingdom at this point. I just cannot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I just don't see that happening.
And a very interesting thing as well that's going on, too, is the fact that if Okada does retain the title of King of Pro Wrestling, he will be breaking Shinya Hashimoto's 489-day record for the longest reign as IWGP Heavyweight Champion on October 22nd.
Right. Well, okay. Well, yeah, so that's for length of time. I actually looked this up earlier. He will not break the record for number of defenses, though, because in a single reign, because that still holds Hiroshi... That's still held by Hiroshi Tanahashi in the reign that Okada ended.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
The first time.
I do recall that.
So.
But it's kind of crazy to think that just a couple of days before Wrestle Kingdom, in this case, should Okada pull off this defense at King of Pro Wrestling, that he becomes like the overall longest reigning champion of all time, which is nuts just thinking about.
It is, and that would give some extra meaning if Naito were to overcome, were to win, which... But, you know, obviously we don't know that yet because, you know, we still have King of Pro Wrestling to get through. So,
yep.
Although I do like the fact that they're not drawing out this whole, you know, the defenses and the challenge for the contract. I do like that. So, you know, we only get, you know, there's only one of these matches happening as far as I know, unless there's another one for Naito to happen during Power Struggle, which maybe.
Perhaps.
Who else beat him? I don't feel like looking.
I'm trying to call Fale, I think, is who it was.
Oh, God, no. Please, no. All right, moving on. So that's King of Pro Wrestling. I think that we may see that Ospreay-Hiromu singles match coming up during King of Pro Wrestling, too, because they're definitely building to that.
Yeah, they're building to something with this, definitely.
Oh yeah, totally. They're definitely building to something. So yeah. Other than that, hopefully I'm sure we'll talk again about King of Pro Wrestling before you know the show happens.
Yeah, I wonder so, if just you know, officially there. So
yeah, well, yeah, we'll definitely talk about that. There's also a Lionsgate Project 8 coming up on October the 12th from Tokyo Shinjuku Phase. So I'm all about those shows. So hopefully we'll be getting back to those. So, let's go back a little bit and let's talk some things. So on the 28th of August, there was the Takataichi produce show.
Yep, season two.
Yeah, season two. In which Minoru Suzuki washed Kanemaru.
Yep,
including, you know, forcing whiskey down his throat.
Yep, we expected that. But the
main event was definitely worth watching, too. Mm-hmm. The main event was a best two out of three falls match between Taka and Taichi and Bushi and Hiromu, which Bushi and Hiromu wearing those split masks, very lucha-like.
Yeah, that was fun to watch.
That was fantastic. I'm also going to say that I really enjoyed the opening six-man match.
ROS against Dino Stones.
Yeah, it was Okay Dojo. It was Kaji Tomato, Taishi Takizawa, and Go Asakawa against Kotaro Yoshino, Dinosaur Takuma, and Marine's Mask. That was a fun match. I really enjoyed that one.
I also
kind of liked Yuma Aoyagi against... actually, the whole show was actually pretty okay.
Yeah, the show was solid. It sucked that Jun Kasai had to miss the show, but Yuma Aoyagi was a very good replacement.
Yeah, we saw, and you saw, that was Jun Kasai, you saw giving a promo after that match during the interval. Yeah, he fucked his hand up in Freedoms the day before.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, he's a deathmatch promotion, so yeah, you will have that.
Makes sense. Also, speaking of Aoyagi as well, too, his match with Taichi at the 45th anniversary All Japan show was actually really, really solid. I was pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, I like that. I'm also one of those weirdos who like Kojima's match against Suwama.
I think
too.
The only thing that I disliked about it was the fact that Doring interfered and basically beat the crap out of Suwama before the match started. That was my only issue with it, because otherwise the match was pretty nice.
Yeah, but I mean, other than that, I mean, I heard that, you know, people were upset about this. It seemed to be, like, a couple of people on Twitter were upset about it, because the crowd still seemed into the match. I mean, they were, you know, going along with, you know, Ichi on Bakiyara or what, you know.
True, but they were, you know, I did notice they were a little bit deflated compared to some of the matches that were happening earlier in that card, because I actually did watch that show from start to finish. I found
were a little deflated. I think, I think they could have put that match lower on the card, to be honest.
True. No,
I think they could have put that match lower on the card, but but I mean, let's face it, this was an angle match, because Suwama and Kojima have had involvement with each other going way back, and then you know, there's a feud right now between Suwama and Doring, you know, over, you know, him quitting Evolution, the Evolution unit. So
yep.
You know, it is what it is. But anyway, by the way, Kento Miyahara beating Shuji Ishikawa. That great match. Go
fantastic.
Out of your way to watch that one.
Exactly. Kento Miyahara is just an exciting ace for All Japan and the right guy to kind of lead them into the long-term stuff that they're doing. I would love to see him in a G1 one day, just because. But then again, we know how rare of a thing it is to pull off with some of the outsiders. And then, of course, you've got to worry about booking and the like. But yeah, Kento Miyahara is awesome. Go out of your way to see him in a match against Shuji.
Yeah, I love Kento Miyahara. I think he's great. I think he's excellent. So anyway, speaking of the main event, so Bushi and Hiromu, Los Dos, as I guess they're calling themselves, if the tweet from Hiromu was anything to go by.
What a great name.
Beat Taka and Taichi. The opening, it started out slow because with the bits with Hiromu just rolling on the ground and, you know, acting like a cat himself, like not wanting, like he just did not want to wrestle Taichi at all. This guy.
Hiromu jamming to Taichi's entrance music was also a nice little touch as well, too. Plus the little back and forth he had with Miho as well. So.
Oh, that was great. Yeah, like he wouldn't let go of the scarf.
Nope.
that was great. Hiromu might be my wrestler of the year, honestly. He really might be my wrestler of the year. But, this was a pretty good match. We saw the Bushi roll for the first time in a while.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then the finish did that Doomsday Device style MX that they did on Taka.
Yeah, that double team was... I'm a fan.
They're giving them a. I mean, they gave them an actual intro, like a team intro, at the Cork and Hall show. Like I said, I'm thinking New Japan may be trying to make a go of making them an actual tag unit. You know, an actual tandem, which I don't mind, honestly.
No, not at all.
I mean, our brother Dion was talking to me. Face to face, we were talking. He can actually see trying to do an Apollo 55 thing with Bushi and Hiromu. Like, if Bushi were to like keep the Kame titles. They both get the junior tag belts, and then somehow Hiromu regains the IWGP junior belt.
And kind of an LIJ sort of domination over the junior division. I'd be okay with that.
Yeah, let's see. Yeah, we'll see how that goes. Mm. So that was fun. And then on the 4th of September, there was the Taka Michinoku 25th anniversary show, which I have not seen. I don't even know if that's made it to the Real Hero Drive yet. I should probably look.
Yeah, I need to double check on that as well, because I think I made a note to myself that I would go out of my way and see it once it's been posted, but I didn't. Between Bola and everything else, I haven't kept up with some of my other wrestling watching. So if it's out there on Real Hero Drive and you listen to this and we don't know about it yet, just give us a shout, Twitter, something
like
that.
Well, I don't see it. Yeah, I don't see it on here. So it may not have made tape yet, or haven't been broadcast yet, because, you know, it's only been a week.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, the reason why we're making a deal of this is because the first of all, Minoru Suzuki was on this special singles match, defeating Go Asakawa. I mean, let's face it, this was a K-Dojo show, so when you get down to it. But so Minoru Suzuki beat Go Asakawa in that match, as did Kazuchika Okada and Gedo beat in the 25th anniversary special tag match, beat Taka and Kota Ibushi. Gedo getting the win for once.
Oh, wow.
Gedo beating Taka with a Gedo clutch.
True.
So there's that. The other match that I really, really, really want to see on this, there was a Michinoku Legends special six-man tag match in which Riki Fuji, Kotaro Yoshino, and Dinosaur Takuma beat a Michinoku Pro Legends team of Great Sasuke, Super Delphin, and Dick Fucking Togo.
Oh my god.
I mean, that takes you back a few ways, doesn't it?
That it does. Whew.
So, my goodness. Yeah, that it looks like that was a... I definitely do want to see that match. Also, your homegirl, Io Shirai.
Yes.
And HZK beat Bambi in Arena, too.
Oh, the ace of my heart, Io Shirai. Yes.
So they were doing that. This is not the only outside stuff that we had to talk about, though. Right now, Satoshi Kojima is still in CMLL right now.
Oh, yeah.
Mm. He's actually going to be on the Anniversario on this coming Saturday.
Oh, yeah, right. Mm-hmm. He's booked.
He's in a trios match with, and I'll look it up to see who he's actually against. But he actually debuted. Yes, he's going to be in the semi-main, teaming with, he's been playing Rudo this whole time. Teaming with Ultimo Guerrero and Mephisto against Volador Jr., Caristico, and Flip Gordon.
Interesting.
That's a kind of a random pairing there.
Flip Gordon's pretty cool, though. I saw him during Janela Spring Break for the first time. I'm like, yeah, it's pretty neat. And then he's got the Ring of Honor contract now.
It's pretty random, though, that, you know, neither Mystico nor Dragon Lee are on the Anniversario, but Flip Gordon is.
I guess all those harmless ribs he keeps getting played on by the Bucks had to pay off in something.
I guess. But anyway, just for what it's worth, this match is bookended by two mass versus mass matches. The first one is a women's one. Princesca Sugihit, who I guess was just a...
She was in Mae Young Classic, yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, against, I don't know how to pronounce this, Zoihis, I think. It's another one. They've had a feud for years, but now it's culminating in a Mascara Contra Mascara. And then the main event is Niebla Roja against Gran Guerrero in another mask match. Yeah, that one doesn't grab me, honestly, compared to some of the other mask versus match mask matches that have headlined the Anniversario recently, including, mm-hmm. you know, Atlantis against
La Sombra in 2015.
La Sombra, my goodness. And then
Dragon Lee versus La Máscara of last year.
Yeah, last year. Yeah, and with Dragon Lee unmasked La Máscara.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's no longer even with CML. Yeah. So.
Which is really interesting in terms of the Máscara matches is that from just a wrestling standpoint, just about 2 weeks ago at this point, there was a very big mask versus mask match between Dr. Wagner Jr. and Psycho Clown, in which Wagner Jr. lost his mask, and turns out to be the guy from the Dos Equis commercial, apparently.
No, like, yeah, by the way, by the way,
53 years old or whatever he is. My God.
By the way, I know that the show already have aired, but actually, Chris, did you actually see that match?
Which one? The
Dr. Wagner Jr. Psycho Clown.
Yes, I did see it. Mm-hmm.
You did watch it because it's going to be on TV tonight as we record. It's going to be on Univision Deportes.
Yeah, nice. No, I did see it. Yes, it was a very good. It was a very good match between the two.
Yeah, the rest of that show was a complete train wreck.
Yeah,
but this isn't a Lucha podcast, so
yeah, no, exactly. But it was fun.
I just got to talk about the Grand Prix mm-hmm. in CMLL because Michael Elgin wowed everybody.
Lucha Mike showed up.
he made the biggest impression. He actually managed to get the most eliminations. He got two eliminations, and listen to who he eliminated in that match. Even though he would lose to Diamante Azul, but not before he himself eliminated Volador and Ultimo Guerrero.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Those were his eliminations. Kojima was only able to take out Valiente before Ultimo Guerrero took him out. Juice Robinson was in that match too. I didn't write down who he eliminated, but but Juice Robinson was there. Juice Robinson beat Dragon Lee before Volador eliminated him.
Mm-hmm.
During the Grand Prix, Matt Taven, former of the Kingdom, former IWGP Tag Champion, nearly died during that match.
Oof.
Because Mephisto went for Angel's Wings from a top or middle rope. Taven assumed a power bomb and landed on his neck.
Oh, that's not good.
Somehow Taven survived and actually saw out the match. So, yeah. That was, ooh-wee. Yeah, that was not a good look.
Definitely not. So, but yes, but I mean, we have had a lot of kind of outside of New Japan, outside of Japan stuff happening just because they kind of took that little break over G1 Climax, obviously. But I mean, not all of it has been sunshine and rainbows, unfortunately, as there's been kind of a developing situation with a guy.
Hold on. Before we do that, I just want to point out that Kojima is still. As I said, he's still over there. He actually had he actually wrestled twice in one day last Sunday.
Oh wow!
He was at Arena Mexico where he teamed with Rush and Pyroth, which, by the way, don't read anything into that because CMLL booking can't keep its own shit straight half the time. Kojima will not be joining Wilson Gobernables anytime soon.
No.
But especially since now it's questionable how much Rush and Pyroth actually will be in CMLL anymore, because I guess they're working the Crash now, because Rush is going to be working against Penta in the Crash now.
Yep.
But they were DQ'd. This trio was DQ'd against Volador, Diamante Azul, and Kenny King at Arena Mexico. But earlier in the night, he was at Coliseo Coacalco in Lucha Memes, where not only was he seconded by Mima Shimoda, but he lost against Hechicero in that match too. So
some interesting stuff out of Mexico, to say the least.
Yeah. So hey, yeah. There's a name we don't usually say outside of Fantastica Mania is Mima Shimoda.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, she seconded Kojima.
Good
so,
stuff on that.
Very so
good
yeah. Stuff. So yeah, let's talk about something serious before we go into PWG. Let's talk about something a little serious. In the last week, it's come out that former IWGP heavyweight champion and one of the only two guys to hold actually all three of the major titles in Japan, the IWGP belt, the Triple Crown, and Noah's Global Honor Crown heavyweight title. It's basically come out that he was injured in May in DDT, and he was paralyzed from the neck down. It's basically come out that, yeah, he's not recovering. It's like a 99% chance he's paralyzed from the neck down for the rest of his life.
Shoulders down is what they mentioned.
Shoulders down. Okay. Yeah. Shoulders down. So, yeah, Yoshihiro Takeyama, about to turn 51. And you know this is for real when at the press conference that was given at DDT, Minoru Suzuki broke down in tears talking about this. So you know this shit's for real.
Mm-hmm.
Like so, I know that they're setting up a Takeyamania, I think is what they're calling it.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm pronouncing that right. You know, for donations to him. I heard talk that they were going to try to set up a way via PayPal so that, you know, Americans and other, you know, folk outside of Japan can contribute. I still have not personally seen that. If you know any further information, please get in touch, because I haven't even blogged about this yet because I didn't want to say something I didn't have all the details on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And for us specifically, I'd love to throw in a couple of bucks for that given the circumstances, just because it's crazy to think about the fact that something like that happened to Takayama after all of the battles he's been through and everything that he's
like some legit battles, like, you know, getting the shit beat out of him literally by Don Fry and Pride.
Yeah, that was
one of those things that, you know, one of those things that made memories. And of course, you know, let's be honest. I mean, the first time he came on my radar was because I fell in love with his team with Takao Omori in All Japan when they were Team No Fear. You know, and I thought that they were just a complete, you know, badass heel team, the type that hadn't really been seen since the early days of the Holy Demon Army.
Yeah, exactly. You know?
So yeah, it's just, yeah, it's a very sad situation, and I mean, I just hope he you know, however his life goes, he's able to, you know, enjoy it. I don't know. I don't know what, I mean, when they say that it's a 99% chance he's never going to do much of anything outside of a hospital bed ever again.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, yeah.
It's just one of those things where all we can hope for at this point is that his way of life is as comfortable and painless as possible given the circumstances, and that if we can throw in some help, however we can, we personally here at Strong Style Story would love to do it. So it's
indeed. So yeah. So anyway, so yeah, we just want to give our support and our support and well wishes to Yoshihiro Takeyama mm-hmm. about this. So anyway, so Chris,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to give you the floor because you were at Battle of Los Angeles last weekend.
Yep.
And there is some minor, not as much as last year, but some minor New Japan dealings going on here. So I guess it's sort of on topic.
Yeah, definitely so. We kind of touched on it earlier in the show that the hot rumor out of Meltzer and a couple of sources right now is that the tag team of Matthew Riddle and Jeff Cobb, otherwise known as the Chosen Bros, will be heading to New Japan towards the end of the year, most likely for World Tag League, which is some pretty big news. They themselves had some excellent matches during the course of the weekend, including a tag bout against the team of Keith Lee and Donovan Dijak, otherwise known as the Monstars, which was fantastic. They came out to the theme and had the custom jerseys and everything else for it too, so that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I think I saw that. I think I saw that picture. Yeah,
that was legit pretty amazing.
Also, the other big rumor that's kind of been roaming around, but I'm not sure if it has a whole lot of validity as of yet, is that the Switchblade promos that we've been seeing out of New Japan are actually for Sami Callihan, of all people.
Oh, no. Really?
They're saying that's a possibility, yeah. That he could be heading to New Japan towards the end of the year as well, too, which I'm not sure on that. But that's
what's been recently revealed about Sami Callihan,
I'm about to say, I'm just like, I've been hearing some of the other stuff as well. Again, nothing official has been reported on any of these things yet, so I'm holding judgment, but certain things look a little bit odd, to say the least, in that regard.
I'm not liking that idea. Yeah. I mean, I finally came around to him as a performer, although now I'm, given what's been talked about recently, I'm not so sure I want him in New Japan, honestly, you know, because, you know, this is another, you know, Tamaki Honma situation, let's just say. But, I'm not so sure about that. I think I like the other idea a lot better.
And it's one of those things where I'm not sure on the validity of it, so definitely don't take it as gospel by any means, please.
This is the first I'm hearing about Callahan being mentioned.
Rumblings have been kind of around here and there during the week, but then there's obviously the other stuff as well that's kind of overshadowed that. The other couple bigger things on that is that Ricochet obviously won Battle of Los Angeles for the second time, first man to ever win it. Two times, which is leading into him doing some stuff as well. Zack Sabre Jr. had a couple of solid matches. His match against Jonah Rock was pretty decent on the first round, and then he actually went up against Phoenix in the quarterfinals, which was really a nice, short but sweet little match between them, which very interesting stuff. Marty Scurll, who we see every once in a while in New Japan, but he's mostly like the Bullet Club's ROH guy at this point, I feel. Decent tournament as well. He had really good matches
You mean besides Adam Page and the Young Bucks, you mean? Cody Rhodes?
Yeah. But no, he had a decent match against Flash Morgan Webster on night one, and then Nightmare against Travis Banks. So the guys who've been under the New Japan banner definitely delivered some really good stuff this weekend, though. If anything, nobody's touching that Keith Lee-Donovan Dijak match during the quarterfinals on night three. Meltzer gave it 5 stars, and legitimately it is, from being there, it was a 5-star match. Like, my God, go out of your way to see that once they have the DVDs and Blu-rays out.
Yeah, those are on pre-order right now. But you're burying the lead here about the Elite against
and I was getting to that because it was a very good match. But the problem was Keith Lee and Walter kind of wore down the ring considerably the match before, to where the ring broke on them like 5 minutes into that match. So they had to improvise on the fly on a lot of stuff, and the match definitely got cut shorter than what it probably would have gone on for. But
This is the first I'm hearing that.
No, yeah, I was there. I literally, and the funny story about that is that we could tell the rig was broken, but we just didn't quite know where. And then after the main event got wrapped up, and Kenny and the Bucks did a quick promo and stuff to thank everybody, the guys came out to sell merch post show and everything else. And as Flash Morgan Webster and Travis Banks were lifting the apron up to get their stuff off from under the ring, we could see the dent that was on the center side there of the ring from our end. And we're just like,
oh my
holy
goodness,
shit, that thing caved. That match would have probably been even, that main event on night two would have probably been even better if the ring had actually stayed in perfect condition. But even,
like I said, this is the first I'm hearing that, so yeah.
Yeah, but even with the ring being broken, they still put on a very, very solid match all around. Like, I was a fan. And the crowd was just popping for, like, Omega and Penta getting on each other's faces. Like, that was a holy shit kind of moment in terms of...
Yeah, you have to wonder if Penta was thinking, when the ring broke, if Penta was thinking, oh no, not this shit again, because remember what happened earlier this year, like, you know, one of Chris Hero's last indie matches, and in AAW, and the ring broke on them.
I wouldn't be surprised one bit if Penta's just having bad memories at that point every time a ring breaks. But
yeah,
but I mean, the in terms of it, it just, they had to do what they had to do with the ring. It's just kind of unfortunate that it had to happen in that match, given that really the last two matches of night two with Keith Lee, Walter, and then the Elite against Lucha Bros and Flamita, just the hype was there all around. People were just very much excited for those, and it was, yeah, it was interesting because originally I didn't have tickets for night two. So
the how'd you manage to get in?
Was when they had everybody do the organization of the lines, they noticed that there was like between 10, 15 of us that didn't have tickets. So the one of the security guards is just like, okay, make just the line just way outside over here. We'll deal with you guys momentarily once we start letting everybody in, which meant maybe there's some hope of us getting in. There was a better shot because they didn't just say, oh, we don't have any more tickets, go home, kind of thing. And then eventually Legion Larry came out. We mentioned that we were the line without tickets. He's just like, just go behind standing room only line and go in with them, and we'll see from there. And then eventually we did get in at that point. They realized that the guy selling the tickets, giving the tickets up front, realized we were the people without tickets initially, and they're like, okay, let's just make sure everybody's in first that has a ticket. They did. Then they looked at the Legion Hall and how pretty much there was an entire wall on the right side as you're entering it, closer to where like the announcer's table is and stuff like that. They're like, that wall's completely empty. There's only like 12, 13 of you. Yeah, let's just get you in and get this over with. So we got tickets in via standing room, but the kicker for me specifically is that once we got in, I'm like, yeah, I'm kind of thirsty and it's really hot. Let me just go grab a couple bottles of water so that way I'm good for the rest of the show. And on my way to the beer line, really good friend in general, but I guess good friend of the show now too, Sammy, she mentioned, hey, Chris, somebody skipped out on front row for whatever reason it is. So Ruby took that seat and we've got an extra seat for you here second row if you want. And I'm like, fuck yes, I do. So I grabbed myself and I was next to Sammy, Ruby, and that crew all together that we met up with and talked during night one, post night one of G1 Special. So yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah, I remember them. Yeah, hey, Sammy, hey, Ruby, how you doing?
Yep.
By the way, sorry if you heard some noise over this broadcast. I don't know if you did. Depending on whose recording we're using. But there was a pop-up ad started playing on a tab. I was following the score of something, and I guess and they played an ad. So sorry about that if you heard that. If not, then don't worry.
Yeah, just so, fair warning inside the Strong Style Story podcast, to say the least.
Whoa.
Together, in terms of it, night one was a little underwhelming, but still good. Nights two and three, I would put on par with, like, stuff like Steen Wolf, for example, and some of the great PWG shows that have ever happened. Those two nights are up there, wouldn't it? Like, my God, it delivered. It was a very, very solid weekend of grabs overall. So,
well, I'm good. I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad to hear that. Definitely glad to hear that. So,
and then of course, one of the bigger news, and we'll get into this just really quickly because there's not all that much from a New Japan related standpoint, but there are couple bits of business involving Death Before Dishonor this year that we have to get to, which first one obviously involves our boy Kushida, since he's still holding their ROH television title. He will be defending it against Kenny King in the singles match, which I haven't seen much of Kenny King's work, but it's Kushida, so I'm confident it will at least be a decent match. Then you have the interesting bit in which it's the Hung Bucks, Hangman Page, Matt Jackson and Nick Jackson, aka the Young Bucks.
God, I hate that fucking name. That is, my God, really?
It's a little bit odd, but then it's them in a for the ROH World Six-Man Tag Team titles defending it against a team to be decided as of yet. I don't think they've announced opponents for them as of yet. You obviously have Jay White. He'll be involved in singles action against Punishment Martinez in a Las Vegas street fight, which, okay, interesting.
Okay, great.
You're having Marty Scurll against Chuck Taylor, Chucky T. Also good stuff there. But the biggest news, obviously, is the fact that Cody, a.k.a. Cody Rhodes, decided to...
Well, we'll be defending against some random Japanese guy.
I still want to beat up whoever said that on Twitter, to be honest, but if you're like, I was salty.
I'm not going to out him on Twitter, but yeah.
But Cody threw out an open invite to whoever in the world wanted to fight him for the ROH World Championship, and lo and behold, Minoru Suzuki decides to answer that call.
Yep. Yeah. So are you looking at ticket prices for that?
Yeah.
You are.
Look,
yeah, I don't think I could do it in the amount of time. I don't think I can do it.
For me, the only reason I could even consider it is just how close I am to Las Vegas. Denver to LA to Las Vegas is not that bad on flight tickets. I've been looking at them being like 70 each way tickets wise, and that's just okay for like a 2-day thing at most. It's Minoru, and the fact that it's his first time in the U.S. wrestling in, I think, 20, 25 years, something like that.
In the United States, he was in what culture last year?
Yes, so, and that's the thing. In the United States is what I'm saying, because I know he was at what culture, and fuck what culture fans in general for what they did to him right there and then.
Yeah, well, yeah, what culture fans tend to bring the dumbass, so... Mm-hmm.
Fair. That's that for ROH side of things. A couple of New Japan guys are showing up there and doing some hopefully very good stuff, even if we think ROH is this carny as it can get from a ownership standpoint and some talent standpoint too. But that's a different discussion for a different time, or a discussion we've probably already had at this point of our lives.
Yeah, pretty much. So, I mean, it could all be fun, but, you know.
We'll see.
Chris, don't forget, major event happening in this time when we record. It's probably one day's time when we release this show. Yoshitatsu will be in All Japan against Yoshihiro Tajiri on the 12th in the first round of the Odo tournament.
I'm so glad you probably can't see my face right now, just how hard I'm poker facing at all of this. My God.
I just don't know. I just don't know. But I think that's all we got today.
Yep. I'd say we are good for wrapping this up here.
I think so. And again, coming up, we are going to do, as I said, we will do a Strong Style history in the month of September. We still haven't figured out what the topic is yet. October's topic is pretty well set. Should we give it away now?
You might as well.
We are going to have a special guest on the show, Brett, aka Bahu, the godhead of FMW internet, on the web, been doing it for decades now. He will be joining us because our October show is a special event commemorating the retirement of Atsushi Onita, and we're going to go through Atsushi Onita's matches in New Japan Pro Wrestling that happened in 1999. So,
oh boy, that's going to include that Chono match too, probably.
Include that Chono match. It will include a Great Muta match too, which I am so thrilled to finally be able to talk a Great Muta match on.
There you go.
On Strong Style History. Yep. So I've been biding my time not talking about Keiji Muto on that show.
Yep, and there you go now.
I finally get to talk about Keiji Muto because honestly, if I really wanted to, we'd do a whole two-part show on Keiji Muto, but we haven't, so I'm not going to.
Yet.
Yes. Oh, yet. It will happen. Just trust me. It will happen. We are definitely at some point going to discuss Keiji Muto's 2001, because that was an incredible year by anybody's standards.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. I think we're done here. Chris, go ahead and plug thyself.
Well, simple enough for me. You can find me on Twitter over at Brazilian Fury. That's with an S, not a Z. Crazy, you know, underscores or anything like that anymore. Decided to make it a little bit simpler on the name. Outside of that, really, that's the main kind of way of getting in touch with me. And then we obviously have Jeff stuff too, which is coming out blogs wise.
I am at Strong Style Story without the E in Style on Twitter. The blog is at strongstylestory.tumblr.com. And we are here by the good graces of Place to Be Nation and the Pro Wrestling Only Board podcast feed. I'm a couple weeks behind on podcasts because I haven't been able to listen to podcasts for a little bit, just because of I usually listen to podcasts in the car while I drive during work, and I've had trainees the last couple of weeks, so I haven't really been able to listen to podcasts. So I'm hoping I can finally get back into that. So
yeah.
Anyway, some great shows on this network. You should really check them out. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so that's all I have. Thanks for tuning in. Shout out to Steve Cash, who I thought was going to join us, but I guess not. Shout out to Dion Wells, who is our
birthday boy,
our friend, and it's his birthday. He was birthday boy. Shout out to Lawrence O'Brien. You nearly won that one, buddy. But yeah, I told you so.
For context, for those who don't know, Lawrence O'Brien has the unfortunate luck of being a Cleveland Browns fan. So, you know.
Yep. And I am not. So, anyway, so that's all I got. Shout out to JB Rowe too. I saw him last weekend briefly. That was fun.
Nice. How's he been doing?
I don't want to say, but I mean, he seemed okay when I saw him. So okay. It's not my tale to tell. So
fair enough.
But yeah, so he's doing okay. We were at a lucha show in a park in Logan Square, at Unity Park in Logan Square in Chicago. So
So that's what you guys were doing last week. And okay.
Yes. Yeah. And then so that was fun. Yeah. Chicago is a great city. Hope to go there more often. So anyway, that's all I got. We'll be talking probably in between Destruction and Kobe and King of Pro Wrestling. And so that's when next you'll hear from us. Stay tuned for another Strong Style History show in the month of September as well. So on behalf of producer Chris Damasceno, I am Jeffrey Wessel. Thanks for listening. Talk to you then. See ya.